Chapter 104. Mostly, prunes and prism, Mrs. General, always on her coach box keeping the proprieties well together, took pains to form a surface on her very dear young friend, and Mrs. General's very dear young friend tried hard to receive it. Hard as she had tried in her laborious life to attain many ends, she had never tried harder than she did now, to be varnished by Mrs. General. It made her anxious and ill at ease, to be operated upon by that smoothing hand, it is true, but she submitted herself to the family want in its greatness as she had submitted herself to the family want in its littleness, and yielded to her own inclinations in this thing no more than she had yielded to her hunger itself, in the days when she had saved her dinner, that her father might have his supper. One comfort that she had under the ordeal by General was more sustaining to her, and made her more grateful than to a less devoted and affectionate spirit, not habituated to her struggles and sacrifices, might appear quite reasonable. And, indeed, it may often be observed in life, that spirits like Little Dorrit do not appear to reason half as carefully as the folks who get the better of them. The continued kindness of her sister was this comfort to Little Dorrit. It was nothing to her that the kindness took the form of tolerant patronage. She was used to that. It was nothing to her that it kept her in a tributary position, and showed her in attendance on the flaming car in which Miss Fanny sat on an elevated seat, exacting homage. She sought no better place. Always admiring Fanny's beauty, and grace, and readiness, and not now asking herself how much of her disposition to be strongly attached to Fanny was due to her own heart, and how much to Fanny's, she gave her all the sisterly fondness her great heart contained. The wholesale amount of prunes and prism which Mrs. General infused into the family life, combined with the perpetual plunges made by Fanny into society, left but a very small residue of any natural deposit at the bottom of the mixture. This rendered confidences with Fanny doubly precious to Little Dorrit, and heightened the relief they afforded her. Amy, apostrophe said Fanny to her one night when they were alone, after a day, so tiring that Little Dorrit was quite worn out, though Fanny would have taken another dip into society with the greatest pleasure in life, I am going to put something into your little head. You won't guess what it is, I suspect. Apostrophe, I don't think that's likely, dear, apostrophe said Little Dorrit. Come, I'll give you a clue, child, apostrophe said Fanny. Mrs. General, apostrophe, prunes and prism, in a thousand combinations, having been wearily in the ascendant all day, everything having been surface, and varnish and show without substance, Little Dorrit looked as if she had hoped that Mrs. General was safely tucked up in bed for some hours. Now, can you guess, Amy? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Fanny. No, dear. Unless I have done anything, apostrophe said Little Dorrit, rather alarmed, and meaning anything calculated to crack varnish and ruffle surface. Fanny was so very much amused by the misgiving, that she took up her favorite fan, being then seated at her dressing table with her armory of cruel instruments about her, most of them reeking from the heart of Sparkler, and tapped her sister frequently on the nose with it, laughing all the time. Oh, our Amy, apostrophe, apostrophe, said Fanny. What a timid little goose our Amy is. But this is nothing to laugh at. On the contrary, I am very cross, my dear. Apostrophe, as it is not with me, Fanny, I don't mind, apostrophe, returned her sister, smiling. Ah, but I do mind, apostrophe, said Fanny, and so will you, pet, when I enlighten you. Amy, has it never struck you that somebody is monstrously polite to Mrs. General? Apostrophe, apostrophe, everybody is polite to Mrs. General, apostrophe, said Little Dorrit. Because, apostrophe, because she freezes them into it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, interrupted Fanny. I don't mean that. Quite different from that. Come. Has it never struck you, Amy, that Pa's monstrously polite to Mrs. General? Apostrophe, Amy, murmuring no, apostrophe, looked quite confounded. No, I dare say not. But he is, apostrophe, said Fanny. He is, Amy. And remember my words. Mrs. General has designs on Pa. Apostrophe, dear Fanny, do you think it possible that Mrs. General has designs on anyone? Apostrophe, apostrophe, do I think it possible? Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Fanny. My love, I know it. I tell you she has designs on Pa. And more than that, I tell you Pa considers her such a wonder, such a paragon of accomplishment, and such an acquisition to our family, that he is ready to get himself into a state of perfect infatuation with her at any moment. And that opens a pretty picture of things, I hope. Think of me with Mrs. General for a mama. Apostrophe, apostrophe, little Dorrit did not reply. Think of me with Mrs. General for a mama. Apostrophe, but she looked anxious, and seriously inquired what had led Fanny to these conclusions. Lord, my darling, apostrophe, said Fanny, tartly. You might as well ask me how I know when a man is struck with myself. But, of course I do know. It happens pretty often. But I always know it. I know this in much the same way, I suppose. At all events, I know it. Apostrophe, you never heard Papa say anything? Apostrophe, apostrophe, say anything? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Fanny. My dearest, darling child, what necessity has he had, yet a while, to say anything? Apostrophe, apostrophe, and you have never heard Mrs. General say anything? Apostrophe, apostrophe, my goodness me, Amy, apostrophe, returned Fanny, is she the sort of woman to say anything? Isn't it perfectly plain and clear that she has nothing to do at present but to hold herself upright, keep her aggravating gloves on, and go sweeping about? Say anything. If she had the ace of trumps in her hand at whist, she wouldn't say anything, child. It would come out when she played it. Apostrophe, at least, you may be mistaken, Fanny. Now, may you not? Apostrophe, oh yes, I may be, apostrophe, said Fanny, but I am not. However, I am glad you can contemplate such an escape, my dear, and I am glad that you can take this for the present with sufficient coolness to think of such a chance. It makes me hope that you may be able to bear the connection. I should not be able to bear it, and I should not try. I'd marry young Sparkler first. Apostrophe, oh, you would never marry him, Fanny, under any circumstances. Apostrophe, upon my word, my dear, apostrophe, rejoined that young lady with exceeding indifference, I wouldn't positively answer even for that. There's no knowing what might happen, especially as I should have many opportunities, afterwards, of treating that woman, his mother, in her own style. Which I most decidedly should not be slow to avail myself of, Amy. Apostrophe, no more passed between the sisters then, but what had passed gave the two subjects of Mrs. General and Mr. Sparkler great prominence in Little Dorrit's mind, and thenceforth she thought very much of both. Mrs. General, having long ago formed her own surface to such perfection, that it hid whatever was below it, if anything, no observation was to be made in that quarter. Mr. Dorrit was undeniably very polite to her, and had a high opinion of her, but Fanny, impetuous at most times, might easily be wrong for all that. Whereas, the Sparkler question was on the different footing, that anyone could see what was going on there, and Little Dorrit saw it and pondered on it with many doubts and wonderings. The devotion of Mr. Sparkler was only to be equaled by the caprice and cruelty of his enslaver. Sometimes she would prefer him to such distinction of notice, that he would chuckle aloud with joy. Next day, or next hour, she would overlook him so completely, and drop him into such an abyss of obscurity, that he would groan under a weak pretense of coughing. The constancy of his attendance never touched Fanny, though he was so inseparable from Edward, that, when that gentleman wished for a change of society, he was under the irksome necessity of gliding out like a conspirator in disguised boats, and by secret doors and back ways. Though he was so solicitous to know how Mr. Dorrit was, that he called every other day to inquire, as if Mr. Dorrit were the prey of an intermittent fever, though he was so constantly being paddled up and down before the principal windows, that he might have been supposed to have made a wager for a large stake, to be paddled 1,000 miles in 1,000 hours. Though whenever the gondola of his mistress left the gate, the gondola of Mr. Sparkler shot out from some watery ambush and gave chase, as if she were a fair smuggler and he a custom house officer. It was probably owing to this fortification of the natural strength of his constitution with so much exposure to the air and the salt sea that Mr. Sparkler did not pine outwardly. But, whatever the cause, he was so far from having any prospect of moving his mistress by a languishing state of health, that he grew bluffer every day, and that peculiarity in his appearance of seeming rather a swell boy than a young man, became developed to an extraordinary degree of ruddy puffiness. Blandois calling to pay his respects, Mr. Dorrit received him with affability as the friend of Mr. Gowan, and mentioned to him his idea of commissioning Mr. Gowan to transmit him to posterity. Blandois highly extolling it, it occurred to Mr. Dorrit that it might be agreeable to Blandois to communicate to his friend the great opportunity reserved for him. Blandois accepted the commission with his own free elegance of manner, and swore he would discharge it before he was an hour older. On his imparting the news to Gowan, that master gave Mr. Dorrit to the devil with great liberality some round dozen of times, for he resented patronage almost as much as he resented the want of it, and was inclined to quarrel with his friend for bringing him the message. It may be a defect in my mental vision, Blandois, apostrophe said he, but may I die, if I see what you have to do with this. Apostrophe, death of my life, apostrophe replied Blandois, nor I neither, except that I thought I was serving my friend. Apostrophe, by putting an upstart's hire in his pocket? Apostrophe said Gowan, frowning. Do you mean that? Tell your other friend to get his head painted for the sign of some public house, and to get it done by a sign painter. Who am I, and who is he? Apostrophe, professor, apostrophe returned the ambassador, and who is Blandois? Apostrophe, without appearing at all interested in the latter question, Gowan angrily whistled Mr. Dorrit away. But, next day, he resumed the subject, by saying in his offhand manner, and with a slighting laugh, well, Blandois, when shall we go to this Messina's of yours? We journeymen must take jobs, when we can get them. When shall we go, and look after this job? Apostrophe when you will, apostrophe said the injured Blandois, as you please. What have I to do with it? What is it to me? Apostrophe, I can tell you what it is to me, apostrophe said Gowan. Bread and cheese. One must eat. So come along, my Blandois. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit received them in the presence of his daughters, and of Mr. Sparkler, who happened, by some surprising accident, to be calling there. How are you, Sparkler? Apostrophe said Gowan carelessly. When you have to live by your mother wit, old boy, I hope you may get on better than I do. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit then mentioned his proposal. Sir, apostrophe said Gowan, laughing, after receiving it gracefully enough, I am new to the trade, and not expert at its mysteries. I believe I ought to look at you in various lights, tell you you are a capital subject, and consider when I shall be sufficiently disengaged to devote myself with the necessary enthusiasm to the fine picture I mean to make of you. I assure you, apostrophe and he laughed again, I feel quite a traitor in the camp of those dear, gifted, good, noble fellows, my brother artists, by not doing the hocus pocus better. But I have not been brought up to it, and it's too late to learn it. Now, the fact is, I am a very bad painter, but not much worse than the generality. If you are going to throw away 100 guineas or so, I am as poor as a poor relation of great people usually is, and I shall be very much obliged to you, if you will throw them away upon me. I'll do the best I can for the money, and if the best should be bad, why even then, you may probably have a bad picture with a small name to it, instead of a bad picture with a large name to it. apostrophe this tone, though not what he had expected, on the whole suited Mr. Dorrit remarkably well. It showed that the gentleman, highly connected, and not a mere workman, would be under an obligation to him. He expressed his satisfaction in placing himself in Mr. Gowan's hands, and trusted that he would have the pleasure, in their characters of private gentlemen, of improving his acquaintance. "You are very good," apostrophe said Gowan. "I have not forsworn society since I joined the Brotherhood of the Brush, the most delightful fellows on the face of the earth, and am glad enough to smell the old fine gunpowder now and then, though it did blow me into mid-air and my present calling. You will not think, Mr. Dorrit," apostrophe, and here he laughed again in the easiest way, "that I am lapsing into the freemasonry of the craft, for it's not so. Upon my life I can't help betraying it wherever I go, though, by Jupiter, I love and honor the craft with all my might. If I propose a stipulation, as to time and place, apostrophe apostrophe, ha." Mr. Dorrit could erect no suspicion of that kind on Mr. Gowan's frankness. "Again you are very good," apostrophe said Gowan. "Mr. Dorrit, I hear you are going to Rome." "I am going to Rome, having friends there. Let me begin to do you the injustice I have conspired to do you, they're not here. We shall all be hurried during the rest of our stay here. And though there's not a poorer man with whole elbows in Venice than myself, I have not quite got all the amateur out of me yet comprising the trade again, you see, and can't fall onto order in a hurry for the mere sake of the sixpences." Apostrophe, these remarks were not less favorably received by Mr. Dorrit than their predecessors. They were the prelude to the first reception of Mr. and Mrs. Gowan at dinner, and they skillfully placed Gowan on his usual ground in the new family. His wife, too, they placed on her usual ground. Miss Fanny understood, with particular distinctness, that Mrs. Gowan's good looks had cost her husband very dear, that there had been a great disturbance about her in the Barnacle family, and that the Dowager Mrs. Gowan, nearly heartbroken, had resolutely set her face against the marriage until overpowered by her maternal feelings. Mrs. General likewise clearly understood that the attachment had occasioned much family grief and dissension. Of honest Mr. Meagles no mention was made, except that it was natural enough that a person of that sort should wish to raise his daughter out of his own obscurity, and that no one could blame him for trying his best to do so. Little Dorrit's interest in the fair subject of this easily accepted belief was too earnest and watchful to fail in accurate observation. She could see that it had its part in throwing upon Mrs. Gowan the touch of a shadow under which she lived, and she even... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.